the races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
Very good Wednesday, race fans. Sirius 219, XM 201, Sports Zone 964. If you're listening to Sirius XM online and at the website as well, stevebick.com. And kind of a transition Wednesday, given that it's opening day at Delaware Park. The little track that could. Hats off to and thoughts to the great Rich Glazier. And, of course, last year Rich was unable to participate in the abbreviated season. They lost, I think they lost a bunch of, I'm not sure what the number of days were that Delaware lost last year, but it was significant. And from what I understand, Rich is not going to participate this year. But his decades-long presence, just synonymous, and of course, you know, much like, you know, some new voices being spread around announcers' booths around the industry. You're going to have a new voice today, Joshua Brown. You know, John Curran. You know, one of those voices that just was synonymous. You know, so much celebrating of the career of Richard Grunder, Jason Beam taking over down there, Tampa, and they'll have that. You know, they've got that end of that weird June 30th, July 1st thing that they do for, you know, for simulcast contract purposes. But Joshua Brown, new at Delaware, and Curran's voice was really distinctive. I mean, that you know, if you were spinning the dial and you punched up Delaware, Curran was unmistakable. And we last year for opening day, actually, we talked to John, and we're going to talk to Kevin DeLuccia later this hour, and we'll get a Delaware Park preview. And there's a couple of, you know, there's a couple of notable, particularly Carol Cedeno, you know, I think the world of, and I think is, you know, vastly under publicized and underappreciated. I mean, she's going, I think, for what, her seventh, eighth riding title at Delaware Park. And if you've never been, If there's a racetrack visit trip planned for this summer for anybody, and it hadn't occurred to you, get to Delaware if you've never been. It's a little treasure with, I think, inarguably the most incredible paddock in the sport. I mean, there's nothing like it. It's, I mean, I've been to Baden-Baden, the town. I've not been to Baden-Baden, the racetrack, but it's the Delaware paddock is like the Black Forest. I mean, it's you've got these big, tall, you know, these big, tall, majestic trees. There's nothing quite like the paddock at Delaware. So, put Delaware on your visit list, all right? If you've never been, you'll enjoy it. So, I've been a few times, and we had a win there. We first time I went, we went to go see our Rampillion, who scooted and booted to a victory. That was a crazy day. I had picked up Andy Serling and Steve Haskin, and Andy met his friend John down there, and our friend Freddie Moskowitz, the great Freddie Moe. Freddie turned up. It was crazy. We had really a fun day at Delaware that day. We'll forget that. I don't know what. I'm trying to remember if there was something that was, there was a reason that I could, it was like a Tuesday, and had the opportunity to not do the show. I forget. I can't remember. I don't know if that predates Casey or not. Anyway, Delaware Park opens today. Will Rogers wraps up their meet. And we didn't, you know, we certainly did not, unfortunately, that's my fault. We really didn't get a chance to shine the spotlight much on Will Rogers this year. Certainly not like we did last year. But they, you know, it seemed like they had a good meet, and they got a couple of Oklahoma stakes to close out the season at Will Rogers today. Speaking of regional and state bred action, that's the Oklahoma version. I don't want this to slip through the cracks. There's a excellent Ohio card at Belterra on Friday. Give them a look, because they've got a five stake slate that the best of Ohio stakes, $500,000 stakes, and the entry box was well filled. You have 14 by 10 by 12 by 11 by 11 in the sequence. The best of Ohio. You got some turf action. You got sprinters. You got little of everything. It's quite good. Long on the dirt, short, and a couple of turf routes, male, female. The Palacios Memorial, the Diana, the green carpet, the Queen City Oaks, the Norm Barron Queen City Oaks, and the Sydney Gendelman. $500,000 Friday at Belterra. Back to the Northeast, and let's touch on what happened at Monmouth yesterday. And as anticipated, a six-race card for Friday evening, Friday twilight. Based on what we heard from Dennis Drazen Monday and Terry Meeks yesterday, in regards to trying to find a common ground toward the season, there was just a series of salvos and sound bites, more or less, from every quarter yesterday, and ultimately a modest not atypical card. I put it up on Twitter, the link, the Jersey Derby is the feature, and 14 riders are featured on the card, and there's at least three that have intentions to spend the summer, including Farron Peterson, and she's on a day's suspension. So when that ends, she intends to ride. Nick Juarez as well intends to ride. And I think Paco Lopez as well. But anybody, John Himes yesterday saying anybody that had other commitments, had other calls, they're still eligible. But anybody that refused calls will not be allowed to ride at the meet. So this is exceedingly contentious and a lot of acrimony in every direction here. You got some people that are attacking riders who are choosing not to participate, And then you got people that are attacking the riders that took calls. And it's a mix of familiar and less familiar. You know, you've got Carlos Montalvo and Jomar Torres, Jose Farrar, Louis Ocasio, Thomas Mejia, Isaac Castillo, Jose Baez, etc. So this first card is assembled, and they've got quite a bit to do, you know, through the holiday weekend. You know, the Jersey Derby starts things off, 7 in there, and actually, as I kind of tongue-in-cheek, mirthfully noted, no boy on two horses. One for Jamie Ness, Indian Lake, and one for Carlos David, Hot-Blooded. Did not name riders. But that's, you know, when it comes to stakes, you've got that leeway. So we'll see how things progress. They're going to run the Mr. Prospector on Saturday and the Politely on Sunday. So this is a difficult situation, and I don't think it's productive to identify any, you know, any party here that is just doing what either they're obliged to do in terms of their their jobs and their livelihoods, and and those that are choosing when it comes to riders, choosing to ride, choosing not to ride, etc. Monmouth's doing what it can. I was surprised, let's say, to see the or to hear that those two versions of things from Dennis and from Terry Meeks the last couple of days about the jocks' interest and willingness and attempts to have input on the on the process with the New Jersey Racing Commission, and of course the commission, because they've got the the ready explanation for not commenting because of the litigation that's out there. They are simply saying they have no comment. So it's a strained situation, to say the least. So we'll just let this play out. All right. I don't think there's any, there's really not much more can you say. And as for the people that are saying, oh, they could barely put a card together, that's the same basic card that they had last year for opening Twilight Racing. They'll have bigger, fuller cards on Saturday and Sunday. So, yeah, it's not that what was laid out on the overnight is basically the same as last year's. Six races, 50 horses or so. So that was what they offered last year as well to get the meet started. But I, as I indicated both to Dennis and to Terry, it just feels like there was a better way to handle all of this. Speaking of better ways to handle things, yesterday, the Pennsylvania Racing Commission meeting, their regularly scheduled meeting, included the snippet that was circulated online, which featured the discussion by Tom Tsoukas and company of backside raids at parks over the weekend. And the reporting on it is going to be incomplete because there's no specifics. So the breathless anticipation of the snippets that came out of yesterday's video clip doesn't really do anybody it doesn't give you any direction other to say that there were half a dozen barns that were searched and tack rooms and so forth. Plus, groom's quarters. And when there's specifics, they'll be actual reporting as opposed to, speculation. Tony's there. I talked to Tony this morning, actually. I wanted to see what Tony had heard and what Tony knew at this point. He was at the track. He was on his way to the track earlier this morning. So we'll talk to Tony later, and Tony will be on tomorrow. And we'll get more details. The term significant contraband was part of the verbiage that Tom Tsoukas suggested. And of course, if you think you know the name, Tsoukas was at the Maryland Jockey Club for a period, and is now the head of the Thoroughbred side for the Pennsylvania Department of Agriculture. So that's why you know the name. We'll see. A couple of things. What comes of that? Let me give you a couple of things about today. Pete's going to visit here. In fact, Casey, you could even reach out to Pete. We're going to go through. I wanted to get out in front of this before next week's vote, the deadline for the vote. But the NHC Hall of Fame and about 400 participants are eligible to vote on the nominees. So Pete and I are going to go through the very difficult. I don't know how you vote here. I know there's a big campaign out there for the champ, for Michael Bacik, but it's a very distinct list of 10 major contest players. So I'm very intrigued to see what Pete's thoughts are. I don't know how you vote for just two of these on this list. And I think I hear Pete in the background. Good morning.
Good morning, my friend. And you stole my opening line I was going to give, which is limiting me to voting for two of these is going to make me feel like a heel for the three or four no-brainers to me that will eventually be in this Hall of Fame that I don't get to vote to this time. But the rules are the rules, so we'll play the game the way they laid it out.
Exactly. And I want to explain, first of all, the eligibility, because even to be eligible to vote is a fairly fairly distinct group. They're players that have been tour members for at least 10 years and have been to NHC at least once. That's a pretty, that pairs things down. And I think the number I heard was 400 or so voters. And then when it comes to the Hall of Fame, here's the eligibility on this front. Competed in NHC-sanctioned tournaments and played consistently well over an extended period of time. Gained the respect and admiration of their peers. Contributed to the overall growth and success of the NHC and or tournament play in general with indelible, positive, and lasting results. And, you know, so it's a little bit of a amorphic list of qualities, but it's understandable, actually, when you go through this list of 10.
In truth, Hall of Fames are very good at instructions like that, that I think it's smart and deliberately provoking thought and conversation around it. The whole thing in baseball, why it's not the Babe Ruth Award for the best hitter, it's the MVP, and the Leafs fans say, well, so-and-so had a great season, but how many more games would they have won? And this other player made the team better in this way and that way. It's kind of fun to be able to get into the minutiae and the nitty-gritty and talk about what those qualifications mean. Because I definitely think when you have a list of worthy candidates like we have here, you have to start getting into those finer points just to be able to make any kind of decision.
Well, the list, I hate to try to, it's posted at the NTRA website. The list is alphabetical, but, you seem obliged to start with the four, NHC champions that are among the list: Ray Arsenault, Stanley Babish, Michael Bacik, Paul Matisse Jr. And then after that, you've got a group that has got all kinds of distinctions, and Bill Sherman and Rich Nilsson, Jim Goodman, David Goodfriend, Sally Goodall, Dennis DeCower. Are the other six? I mean, how do you parse this down?
The pain. I love the pain in your voice because I feel it as well. I can make you a coaching case for every single name on that list. One lens through which you can look at it is emphasizing the championship itself. But as you reread me those instructions, Steve, I think that isn't where I want to go. I want to look at that. The two ideas that really come back to me is that consistency over a number of years, and that idea that maybe the person involved has done something extra for the game. And again, I can make cases for every name on this list, but one name I feel like has maybe been underappreciated in his contributions to the history of this event is Dave Gutfreund. And certain Twitter rants aside, some at my expense, he's also a friend. But six in the money finishes, four top 20s. He does have a championship, not in the event itself, but vis-a-vis the tour. And this is somebody, and gosh, I mean, look to no further than me and my work in the contest space. I wouldn't have been able to get to know and to promote the NHC itself without, and more broadly, contests in general, without his help. This is a guy who went out of his way when I told him I was going to start working at the DRF and I was working on a book, to introduce me to all manner of players who ended up sharing their insights and ended up, hopefully, and if what I hear from the players out there is right, some of the work, I'll tout my own work in the contest space, not because of anything I did, but simply because I feel like I've put the microphone or the phone in front of the right people who shared their insights. And DG has been invaluable in that regard. Obviously, there's the Derby Wars connection as well and other efforts to try to promote contest play. But even if you take all that ephemeral stuff aside, I just think in terms of the depth and breadth of his resume, I'm going to be pained if I can't talk about candidacies for at least four of the players on this list, but he's the first one that pops to mind.
Which is fair and absolutely appropriate. And I would say if there's a bookend in terms of high profile players that you know that have a championship credential and has the gravitas elements, it's Paul Matisse. I mean, the two of them, from headliner awareness, even if this was not NHC centric, if you just talked about, you know, famous, widely known and respected, the two of them, you know, jump to the fore, but then you can, turn to somebody like Bejcik, who, in addition to his play, has had, this ongoing good works, intentions involving horse rescue and that element, his high profile retirement of the horse that won him that won him the NHC. Glorious Dancer. And I hadn't really thought about the participation in the TV series, but there's also that. But everybody, every one of these has got those kinds of esoteric qualities.
You mentioned two others. If you gave me a four horse exacta box for this, which is about the least, if you held my feet to the fire more than that, I'd get really uncomfortable. But I started with Good Friend, and you just mentioned two of the others. Paul Matisse to me is somebody who I also just love as a great representative for horse players. The fact that he does this full time, and the thing about Paul that's so interesting is obviously he's very comfortable being a public advocate for horse players, but he's also done a ton of stuff behind the scenes and is just so generous of his time, whether it's to somebody with a brand new podcast or a racetrack executive with questions from a bettor's point of view. He's up for being on any committee and is somebody who really believes in giving back to the game. And I mean, I think just in terms of his quality as a horse player, if there was a tournament between everybody up for the Hall of Fame and they were just all competing against each other, I'd make Paul the favorite. Like, that's how great a player that I think he is. So he's definitely on that list. And then Mike Bejcik, on the nuts and bolts, just on the raw dope, as it were, here you have your all-time leading money winner. Now, obviously, the purse was bigger that one year, whatever. But it's not like he's some one-hit wonder. He's there every year. He's a terrific player in his own right and certainly has a regular resume, if you will. But I really think he gets less credit than he deserves for the reason that you mentioned, Steve, which I think there was a sea change around the time of the Glorious Dancer story and the Bejcik win of horse players just becoming a lot more cognizant of the athletes who make our game go and what happens to them after their racing days are done. And he has been a tireless advocate in that regard. I mean, to me, absolutely Hall of Fame worthy. And then you mentioned the horse players thing. When you carefully read those rules again, and it talks about contributions to the NHC, I mean, I was there when horse players, I was working on DRF when horse players came out, and I saw the spike in participation in qualifying tournaments and at the event itself that were directly due to that show, which was something that, a busy dude generously gave his time to do. And I have to say, historically, you ask a horse player how they got their start, and it's almost always that, my aunt, my degenerate aunt took me, my uncle, my grandfather, my dad, my mom, whoever it was. I would say around that time, 25% of the answer shifted from an older relative got me involved to I saw that show Horse Players on TV and thought, hey, maybe I could do that. Among the list, my co-host on the Players podcast, Jonathan Kinchin. So I do think that being part of Horse Players should, it's the third thing I mentioned in terms of Bejcik's achievements, but I don't think it's nothing. And just another one I'm very glad to get the chance to talk about here on these airwaves. And man, I wish they could pick more than two.
a couple of others that you know, we'll go through all 10 and just laud their merits. When it comes to the way in which NHC elevated kind of a rank and file serious horse player into into a wider consciousness, you look at guys like Ray Arsenault and Stanley Bavlish and Bill Sherman, all three of them, I think we can kind of lump them together. That and there's countless other guys that haven't necessarily won or had final table visits and all that. There's countless guys. Ken Jordan is a guy that you could that I think of in this vein, that when they break through and either win NHC or are among the finalists, it's logical, but it's kind of a wheel of fortune when it comes to taking guys and singling them out and getting them up there. But talk about Stanley and Ray and Bill Sherman.
I'll start with Ray because that's the fourth name I need in my my baseball exacta box here. Not just because of the win and the super deep run, but this is somebody who's just been an incredible ambassador for the NHC and contest play in general. When I went to my first NHC to cover it, actually, the first person I met who made me think this is a special group of humans and I'm going to get along with them just fine, because I went in there as an outsider. The first guy I met was actually Keith G., the legendary late Keith G. But the second guy I met was Ray Arsenault. I don't even think he was playing in the tournament that year. He went out and he tried to qualify via the last chance. It didn't work out. And he hung around to talk with his buddies, and that made him a great person for me, the newbie, to ask all these questions of, hey, which one's Bill Sherman, or whatever question I had for him. And not only was he incredibly kind to me, but I've seen him do that with other people as well. He's to me represents most of what's good about being a horse player. And you see the his resume and the amount of qualifications he has and the tireless promotion he met. I've got to mention him as somebody else who it would hurt my heart if he didn't end up on my top two this year. And certainly, like so many on this list, a future Hall of Famer, and the future maybe now. You also mentioned Stanley. I mean, that great run he had, my years blend together post-pandemic, Steve, but he'd obviously had the early championship. And then to come back within the last few years and make such another deep run, qualifying all the way in between, and then his work on the Players Committee. I mean, that's like a job, And I'm going to give extra credit to people who spend a lot of their free time trying to make this event, the NHC, better. And Stanley's certainly somebody whose resume I think compares very nicely to the group of players that's already in the Hall of Fame. And then Bill Sherman, I mean, another guy who you want to talk about consistency, a player who's always there and loves contest play and has really shown the way for contest play to be the way that a lot of horse players enjoy the game. It's a myth that contest players aren't also cash players. There are a ton of them, but it's also true that contest play is another subset of players. The contest play has really helped keep them in the game. And I think Bill Sherman shows you can maybe be a little bit more of that type of player and still be incredibly sharp and able to hang, not just in the mythical money tournaments, but also in the live bankroll side of things. I mean, just and somebody else who I'll just say on a personal note has just been incredible to deal with over the years, and extremely willing to share his time and insights to help others.
A couple of names I'm going to keep throwing these at you. There's two interesting names that have not just the NHC bona fides to be on this list, but also have got long-standing industry ties, and Jim Goodman and Rich Nilsson.
Two people who I think will eventually be in the Hall of Fame based on their body of work. We'll start with Rich. Rich has been somebody who I wrote Rich Nilsson. This is funny, actually. I wrote Rich Nilsson what amounted to a fan letter in about 1996 when he was doing the newsletter was back then. It was I don't know if it was associated with Briss or anyway, there was some sort of daily horse racing newsletter that was a big deal. And, you know, I could tell right away we're dealing with somebody who really cared because, you know, I had probably made 15 wagers in my life at that point, and he's taking his time out to answer my, you know, question about weight or the claiming system or some very, very newbie thing. And, you know, I'm far from the only one. This is somebody who has shared his wisdom about the game extensively in his role at Briss and his new role with the ADW and through the Game of Skill website. And then just, you know, you look at his resume, 16 qualifications, 2 top 10s, 4 cashes. I mean, this is – and another who spent time in the Players Committee. I mean, it's extremely impressive body work. And then Jim Goodman, you know, nobody runs and made them contest players and given countless contest players phenomenal opportunities to score out. I always say about Jim Goodman and Nate Newby, it reminds me of the old Cy Sperling ad, Steve, here in New York, the Hair Club for Men, and he was also a client. The reason they run such great tournaments is they're also a client. They're also
exactly
playing in tournaments. And it makes guys like Nate and Jim, it gives them like that much more of a sensitivity, and they're just invaluable. And I think, you know, Jim obviously is qualified for the NHC. Let's see, we have it here in the notes. He's been there 5 times. He's helped out. I mean, his role is really interesting because it really is. That's really one of the, it's a hybrid role between, you know, it's certainly impressive and awesome that he makes the effort to qualify every year, but he's also helped out, you know, on the auditing side of things, not just at the NHC, but at the Breeders' Cup Betting Challenge as well. I mean, he is, to me, a no doubt future Hall of Famer. I just, the list is so deep is the only reason I didn't get to him sooner.
And Dennis DeCower and Sally Goodall. Sally, this year's tour champion and an 18-time qualifier, has run a streak, you know, dating back to 2006. And, you know, DeCower is an institution.
Both players who, you know, I think will eventually see enshrinement. I'd love to. I mean, Sally's run with the qualifications is unbelievable. I mean, like you said, nobody has more, and to have an uninterrupted streak is also really extremely cool. Has the tour championship based on that great 2020 run? What I'm guessing will happen with Sally is there will be a year in the next 3. Where there's a deep run at the NHC itself, and that'll be the like total over the top pushing moment. And then Dennis DeCower is another one who imminent induction. I can make you the case right now. 15 times qualified, 3 cashes, including a second. Tireless work on the Players Committee and also as a mentor and somebody who I know has been. You talk about his skill as a mentor. I first met Dylan Donnelly. Geez, he was so young. This must have been 7 years ago now in the Logan suite at Santa Anita, where they had met somehow, and he was sort of showing him the ropes of contest, and he introduced me to him. I mean, he looked like he was 19. He must have been in his early 20s, just saying something to the effect of, this is the guy you're going to be hearing from. So, I mean, again, it's very hard for me not to give that extra credit to people who spend so much of their time trying to grow the game and be there for younger people. And I certainly think, I mean, Dennis is now I want a fifth horse in my exacta box that I have to vote for this time.
That's the problem here. I mean, that just is what makes this, you know, and you know what's interesting? I really should have pulled up the existing Hall of Fame as well, because it is notable that there is sort of a different appreciation for this, and you know, that includes, you know, players like Chris Laimi and Trey Stiles, Roger Satina, you know, who has come close repeatedly. So it isn't just, you know, hitting walk-off home runs and winning the thing. It's unique. It's kind of a different, and it's a little bit, you know what it's like, is it's like the George Wolf for the jockeys, because it's something that the peers are voting on it.
That's a great point and a great analogy. And one reason why I went away from, I think some people might say, okay, let's just look at champions and go from there. And I mean, I have some sympathy for that point of view when you have a list this deep, but I think the true spirit of the award is much more what you're saying, Steve, where it's the two things, the consistency over a long period more than an individual or two pop. You know, it's not like it should be all the champions just get in the Hall of Fame. It's deeper than that. And then that other layer of contributions to the event itself. And I love that they said, I think it was actually very selfless of the NHC and the way they wrote the rules to make it very clear that the contributions are not just supposed to be, oh, and people who've been great to our event, but to our event and contests in general. I like that. I like that a lot, looking at the wider world. And I like the new voting process of throwing this open to people. I mean, look, they've done a great job behind closed doors to this point, picking the nominees. I had the pleasure, I think the first, can't remember, was the first four or six who got inducted, I had the pleasure of being the guy up on stage at the ballroom ringing them in. And of all the things I've done, you know, since I started working in racing full-time, I have to say those was some of the funnest stuff, and like just such a great honor to get to be part of that. But I think that the new method of making it more like the Wolf with the peers voting is only going to make this honor more prestigious and more coveted. So kudos to them for changing it up a little bit.
And in fact, now that I do have it in front of me, so people know who has already been enshrined on this front. I mentioned a couple of names, but you know, here's the rundown: Richard Goodall, Roger Satina, Trey Stiles, Brian Wagner, Steve Wolfson Jr., Chris Laimi, Steve Wolfson Sr., Paul Sherman, and by the way, I tweeted Paul's tweet moniker instead of Bill's, so I got to make that correction. Steve Crist, kind of a ring of honor, kind of a distinction,
oh, yeah,
having, you know, basically grandfathered the whole concept. And Judy Wagner, of course, the late Ron Rippey, and Mike Mayo as well.
I mean, that's a list you want to be on if you're a horse player. So it was great hearing back and remembering getting to be a part of that and getting to talk up Ron Rippey and being able to give the plaque to his widow. That was like I said, just an incredible honor. And Steve Crist has been so important to my career and to horse players in general. He was in the inaugural class that I got to present, and yeah, it's his. In many ways, this was his baby, and something. I mean, you know, there's a lot of fathers for this idea. I don't want to get angry texts out there from some of the other folks that were there at the beginning, but you know, his conversation with Tim Smith back in the day about what could be done to make this stuff special, and specifically that idea of the horse player getting an Eclipse Award and being honored along with the other people who make this sport go. And, you know, you think about the last four decades in racing. I challenge anybody to name somebody who's tried to do more for horse players than Steven Crist has.
Oh, yeah, very much so. And this is tough. I put up the bios for everybody, Pete, to they can peruse. And I think it's June 3rd, I believe, next Thursday. Let me just confirm that. I believe that's the deadline for the vote, if I'm not mistaken. I think that's what I saw. Anyway, it's next week is going to be the deadline, and here we go. No, June 2nd, actually. June 2nd,
okay.
Next Wednesday, 5 p.m., so a week from today for those that are eligible, and that means NHC members who have been on the tour for at least 10 years and have qualified at least once. So that's quite a, you know, that's quite a number of the, you know, a typical 600 or 700 player field.
I'm very curious to see how they come up with it, and I thank you, Steve, for not holding my feet to the fire and reveal my ballot here, because now I can, you know, I can play politics and let it all play out.
The fact, and Paul Weiser just he just tweeted in response: all 10 should be in. Tremendous crew, and that's that's the beauty of this. It's
overwhelming. It's fun though. I mean, and the idea is to make it fun and to provoke discussion, not to be like exclusionary to who doesn't make it. And you know, we get to do it. You know, it's not like the Baseball Hall of Fame. You don't come off the ballot. I assume this will keep rolling, and we'll eventually. Yeah, I think it's quite likely that we'll eventually see all 10 of these names get in. It's just a question of the order. And so, here's a question for you, Stephen. You might not. I hate to ask a question that I don't know the answer to. But so this is for, there'll be another class coming up real quick, right?
Sure,
this will be given this year, and then there'll be two more early next
right.
year. So
that's right.
That's the good news is we're really, before too long, we'll see, we're very likely to see four of these names, unless there's somebody I'm forgetting who's going to be coming on the ballot in the interim.
Well, and you know, in terms of predilection, I don't think anybody has to worry about, you know, being kind of Orlando Cepeda'd in here. You know, anybody worried about any weed smoking issues? I don't think that's going to hold anybody. Actually, we know who it might hold back, but if that was an issue.
You won't mind my saying that.
No. Well, and I've been urged. I was being urged over the last couple of weeks, and I hope John heard the hurricane is not put off that I did not have him on, but I did. I didn't. The campaign for Bejcik is everybody. You know, you do wonder if there's political consulting going on behind the scenes. I mean, because there is this protracted and very aggressive marketing campaign.
Yeah, maybe a little too aggressive. Look, I love John, and obviously, Bejcik was one of the first names that, you know, that we talked about. But it doesn't. I think you might get to the point where it especially when you're dealing with, you don't want to create like a fatigue idea among your voters either. You know, let the facts speak for themselves. If there's one name on this list of 10 that doesn't need an aggressive lobbyist, it's Michael Bejcik.
No, he's right. Although, you know, overexposure is that a? I guess maybe that could be. I wanted to make sure
when it's horse players who are voting. You know what I mean? We're dealing with in the larger world. If you were looking at this like an actual political race where you had like low information voters and stuff like that, those kind of tactics I think would be absolutely needed. But when you're dealing with like a hip with it. You know, if anything, too smart audience like horse players, that's where I worry you could easily take the contrarian in them and make them be like, I want to vote for Bejcik, but I've seen too many tweets.
Well, he'll have the option of bringing in a different campaign manager if this is not as long as we don't have to see what's his name. His pal, his Louisiana, as long as there aren't going to be, you know, recorded Carvel ads extolling Bejcik, it will be all right.
Very, very funny, and I say that with love, John. Don't be upset.
No. I absolutely wanted to get this in because it is, you know, there is every you know, opportunity here for a lot of the players that are on, you know, on the tour and involved and looking forward to the summer trip to Vegas, which, by the way, and you and I said this, you know, weeks ago, the August scheduling is going to pay handsomely because, in fact, Vegas getting ready for, I think, a June, I'll talk to Rich Eng tomorrow, but I think a June, is it June 1st wide opening or is it July 1st? But anyway, it's coming up, you know, that they're, and, you know, having just talked to Nick Luck on Monday, the news this morning that Nick delivered, in fact, they've tripled the capacity for Royal Ascot. So from 4,000 now 12,000 daily, and you know that'll be well received today.
Oh, it's great news, and you're reminding me, Steve. I'm going to have this difficult conversation. My wife Susan's currently downstairs in my office on the Peloton. I haven't told her about the 12,000 yet. Surely that means I can get in. The problem is going to be we need that country to come up with more sensible rules for double vaccinated people. I think as of this moment, I'd still have to quarantine for 5 days upon arrival, which would probably disqualify me. But if we can get that down to, you know, 48 hours, all of a sudden I might be busting out the top hat and tails before too long.
Well, in fact, Brendan Walsh laid that out the other day when we talked to him on Monday about the extravagant kid. And he's got, in fact, handler, the groom is going over, I think, like today, in fact, and establishing the multi-day, you know, the multi-day quarantine in advance of extravagant kid being sent over. So Brendan said the same thing, that if they relax the parameters, then he might go, and I suppose Dave Ross as well. But you know, that part of it, you know, still to play out over the next couple of weeks. And I know the people, you know, to turn things towards Saratoga, and I got a request on Derby Trail last night, you know, what's the ticket situation? You know, I think Naira is also, you know, kind of playing a little bit of the waiting game so that they can maybe only, you know, deliver the, you know, the ticketing concept and the attendance concept once without having to, you know, keep changing it. But it looks better and better. And Pat McKenna actually, you know, a month ago even suggested that we're looking at sections devoted completely to those with the Excelsior pass, you know, with the fully vaccinated pass.
Well, love that idea.
100% capacity in
business
in
as
sections.
Usual in, yeah, those sections. I mean, how cool, yeah, is that?
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, I can't wait, Steve. I'm very unlikely to make Ascot in the real world because of, you know, everything involved with it. I will go if I can, but I'm so looking forward to the Saratoga meet. And I've talked to so many players, people coming out of the woodwork who've heard me on here over at InTheMoneyPodcast.com, making their plans to come up. And yeah, I think we'll be doing, I think it's safe to say, and maybe we can do some of this on At The Races too, we should definitely do some good Saratoga lifestyle material, telling people places to eat and drink and stay before it all gets going. Because I think I just have this, I mean, I hope I'm not being over optimistic, but it feels like there could be some aspects of business as usual.
Yeah,
and I think, you know, a roaring 20s vibe could be or at least part of the meet up at Saratoga this year.
No, it with each passing day here, you know, I'm seeing more signs, you know, converted to fully vaccinated people, you know, welcome without, you know, without masks. It much more relaxed on a daily basis. And Tina and I were, you know, we had a busy weekend. In fact, we had a crazy weekend that you'll appreciate. Kevin DeLucci is going to join us momentarily from Delaware, but I'll tell you this story because you'll get a kick out of it. We were going to go to Troy to the farmer's market Saturday, but we got hung up, so we didn't go Saturday. So Sunday we said, well, let's go to Dorset instead. So we go over to Dorset to the farmer's market there in Vermont, which we love. And then we're driving back home, and there's a sign, a state sale. And Tina says, Let's stop. It's a state sale. And I wasn't sure who was in the car with me because she never, you know, I'll stop, you know, I'll stop at any tag sale or anything, but she hates
it. That sounds
like
a place you could get into some real trouble, all that cool old ephemera. I know how you roll.
Exactly. So you have no idea, though. This takes a bunch of twists and turns. So we drive up. It's just south of the Equinox, Manchester. You know, right in Manchester Center, and you know where the Equinox Hotel is. And so it's like a weird subdivision, a big farm, an old farm, and there's like five houses spread around, and this nice house, nice up on a hill. So we park and we go up, and it's obviously a house, you know, it's being cleaned out for, it turns out that there's the closings tomorrow. So they needed to get rid of everything. And there was a lot of stuff. And I found two cookbooks. I would have been happy with the $2 that I had to fork over for the cookbooks. But Tina decides, she goes upstairs and she says, come upstairs. I come upstairs. There's a four-poster bed that was very nice. And they were giving away this four-poster bed. So the next thing I know, I'm taking apart a four-poster bed. And we're loading most of it except for the mattress and box spring and the headboard. We get everything else into the car. So we're going to have to go get a pickup. We're going to have to go get a van or something to pick up the rest of it. And then there's a piano in the main great room. And I see the sign on it, and it says, free, you haul it. So I said to the guy, I said, you know, kind of a small, you know, a small little, you know, like a like a concertina, and 400 pounds. So we immediately, I look at Tina. Tina looks at me, and you know, how do you say no to a free piano?
I mean, if you play the piano, that's a slam dunk.
Well, so we I haven't had lessons. I had to give up my piano lessons for my bar mitzvah lessons. So my one song, I have one song that I learned for a recital. That was it. So anyway, we then start to now reach out to anybody we can think of that's got a truck or a pickup truck or anything. And finally, the upshot is we end up finding somebody that would do it and come pick it up. So we end up with this piano. Tina's already got online lessons, and she'll be at Cafe Lena in July by the time we're done here. It was the craziest. So we ostensibly we went to Dorset. We also had to go pick up a pickup truck or a van, a U-Haul, to go get the rest of the bed. So what was going to be a 1 hour, this was like Gilligan's Island, what was going to be, let's go to Dorset. I happen to like this whole wheat sunflower seed bread from this one farm baker. And then there's the guy, the cheesemaker from Woodstock, Vermont, that makes a really nice, you know, that we went for bread and cheese and maybe some fresh pasta. We were going to be gone from 9:30 to 10:30. We finished this odyssey by about 8 o'clock on Sunday night. So it ended up being like a 10-hour enterprise where we ended up driving from Manchester to Saratoga, picking up a U-Haul, driving back to Manchester, getting the bed, bringing the thing to the house, then bringing the truck back to Saratoga. We actually had dinner at Pinnell's, and finally got home at about 8:15. It was
so much for the 3-hour tour.
Exactly. But I knew you'd appreciate the piano.
That's awesome. No, that's great. That gives me fantasies of a world that was changed where there were 28 hours in a day instead of 24, so I sit in front of one of those things again. I took a class in college starting with nothing and absolutely loved it, but just didn't, you know, you just gets lost in the way. But heck, if I saw one for free and had the opportunity to do what you did, I'd have been all about that too.
Why not, right? What, you know, how are we going to say no? And we also got a Leroy Neiman of an Irish pub.
Oh, cool.
That's really nice. So listen, my attitude is Ryan Gosling learned how to play piano for La La Land. If Ryan Gosling can do it, I can do it, or Tina, you know.
Have you done the social media post with all these items? I want to see the bed. I want to see the piano.
All right, I'll put up. All right, Neiman. All right, I'll take picture. The Neiman actually ended up above the piano, so that's an easy one. And yesterday, you don't know what went on. I had to. She and I. It's lucky. I'm lucky. I'm still married this morning because she, in her inimitable fashion, the bed, of course, had to be brought upstairs immediately. Yesterday, it couldn't stay on the back porch for a couple of weeks. We got like a circular, not a circular stair, but not an easy stairway to negotiate with a mattress, a box spring, etc. And, you know, of course, every step I took was the wrong step.
My back hurts just hearing this story.
I did not expect to go on this odyssey, but Pete, this was great. I appreciate it.
Always a pleasure. We'll be back next week with Horse Players Happy Hour. We're taking the week off with the cool lack of Thursday racing. Hopefully I'll get to come see you in person. Are you going to be broadcasting from Belmont next week?
I will be. I'll be on the track apron as always, and looking forward to going down Sunday.
Fantastic. We'll be talking soon.
Pete Fornatel, everybody, looms boldly in the Money Players Podcast, of course, and all the terrific coverage and various shows and personalities involved. We're going to stay right here, and I should mention, I didn't even get a chance, Pat Cummings is going to join us in about 15 minutes. Pat has finished, speaking of odysseys, like Homer, Pat has finished the Iliad about wagering security and is going to kind of tie it all together for those that have been reading, you know, the installations about the security issues on the tote system. And we'll talk to Pat in a little bit. But right now, it is opening day at the Little Track That Could. That's an homage to Rich Glaser. And Kevin DeLuccia joins us from Delaware Park on opening day. Kevin, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. How are you doing?
Tremendous. And I was not going to let opening day slip by without a visit down to Stanton. And I hope it's as beautiful there as it is up here.
It's a little cloudy. We're hoping we're going to dodge some rain showers today. But it's, as Rich Glaser used to say, it never rains at Delaware Park.
No. and there's a horse that loves you in that card somewhere today.
Yeah.
You know, before we do anything, actually, Kevin, give everybody an update. How's Rich's health?
We tend not to comment. I mean, he's doing well, but
okay.
He will not be back this season.
And, no,
you know,
I know.
We're hoping to see him in the future, so.
No, I just hope, best wishes. One of the greatest ambassadors for horse players and fans that, the last five decades, who can
four,
keep track?
Yeah, it might be five, yeah. But we've missed him the last few years, and we do wish him well as well. But he's doing okay.
Good. We also know that, we look back to last year and it, you guys, your season was right into the teeth of the pandemic. And, you did the best you could. This year, though, it feels like you can, really get back to the task at hand.
Definitely. It's a huge change from last year. And with the state, lifting some of the restrictions just last week, it's a much different feel this year in preparing for the meet. So we're excited to see all the smiling faces back at Delaware Park of our loyal fans.
Give us a snapshot of what that entails. I mean, is there restrictions? Do people have to bring proof of vaccination, masking? What's the policy, starting out here?
In the state of Delaware right now and at Delaware Park, it's just it's strongly encouraged if you have not been vaccinated to wear a mask. Other than that, the restrictions have been lifted and our capacity restrictions have been lifted as well.
Wow.
So we're looking back to getting back to pre-COVID days.
Oh, tremendous. All right. That's about as perfect a scenario as possible. And of course, the outdoor, the picnic area and what is easily called the greatest paddock in North American racing, as a venue. And I absolutely urged everybody, if they're making a northeast racetrack tour swing, if they've never been to Delaware, it belongs on the calendar. Let's talk about the calendar and the stakes, because really we're going to get right into it pretty quickly into June, July.
We do, yeah. Obviously, today's opening day. We'll be running 3 days a week, Monday, Wednesdays, and Saturdays up until June 24th, which will add Thursdays through September. And definitely the highlights, the Delaware Oaks, the Grade 3 Delaware Oaks, will be July 3rd. And then followed right back the next week, end with the Delaware Handicap, the Grade 2 Delaware Handicap, on July 10th.
$400,000 and the Grade 2, July 10th, July 3rd for the Oaks. There's also plenty of, you know, miscellaneous action that accompanies those cards, including the, you know, the Kent, for instance, the mile and the eighth turf standard, and races the Robert Dick on the undercard for the Delaware Handicap. And, you know, with the start of last week in Baltimore, the match series, you've got match series races involved as well, right?
Not this year.
Not this year? Okay.
No, not this year. Well, that got moved to next year. I think there was when that was planned out, there was a lot of unknowns with all the racetracks still as being part of the pandemic. So that was deferred. I know Pimlico did host a few match series races
three of
this
them.
Year.
Okay. All right. Well, and I know that Alan Foreman is eager and anxious to get everybody, you know, back and the full slate. Just the fact that Match came back so successfully here the last, 2 years ago. It's just a welcome series. In terms of welcoming horsemen and riders and owners, give us a feel for the way the season sets up.
We're looking for, you know, a great season again this year. We do have almost 1,100 horses in the stable area
nice.
Right now, which is significantly higher than the last few years. You know, we've got a couple. You know, we've got Jamie Ness chasing history, looking for his seventh training title to tie Scott Lake and Bud Delp. Carol Sedania will be back. She's looking to make history to break Michael McCarthy's record for her seventh riding title. We have a new announcer after 37 years of listening to John Curran. You know, we wish him well. We were sorry to see him go, but Joshua Brown is our new announcer this year. He most recently came from Presque Isle, where he announced there. We do have regulars, and then we have some newer faces. You know, Jonathan Thomas will be here, Lacey Gaudet, Patrick McBurney, Gerald Bennett, Michael Stidham, Michael Trombetta, Hugh McMahon. We have, you know, a lot of new faces here this year, so we're looking forward to a great meet. You know, we're starting out with a 10 race card today, so you know we hope there's great things to come this year.
Well, and I'm just looking at today's card too. I mean, you got nice full fields and a nice eclectic mix. What's the Arabian schedule?
I'm sorry, I missed that. I'm sorry what you said, Steve.
The Arabians, what do you got with the Arabians this year?
The Arabians, we don't have anything the next 2 days, but we have several on site, and, you know, as the races fill, you know, we'll have them out on the track.
Nice, nice. Well, I'm looking at this opening card. Give us a glance at, while we're doing this, let's look at the wagering menu too. Anything new, anything different? I see a 15% pick five starting in race three.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty much similar to what we've done in the past. Nothing overly new in the wagering options.
Okay, so it looks like a middle of the card pick five, races three through seven. Pick fours, you got, looks like, is it two or three pick fours? Looks like two pick fours, one at the start, races one through four. And then a second mid card, fifth through the eighth, and I don't see a late pick four. Okay, so two pick fours and kind of a mid card pick five, and you know, everything you could want to get the meet going. You know, again, for those that have never been, cannot urge enough a trip to Delaware Park. And you know, in terms of ease of access, I'm not sure. I suppose in New York with Aqueduct and actually all three tracks, four if you count Finger Lakes, you know, conveniently located off a highway. I mean, you can't, it couldn't be easier to get to Delaware Park.
Oh, it is. Exit 4B right off 95. It's about as easy as it gets. It drives right into the property.
Kevin, I wish everybody the best of luck. Hope it's a safe and successful season. Just an underappreciated treasure on the Eastern Seaboard when it comes to the ovals and the summer season into the early fall at Delaware Park. Certainly, we'll talk about races whenever we can.
We appreciate it, Steve.
My pleasure. Kevin DeLuccia, everybody, and we wish Joshua Brown as well the best of luck up in the announcer's booth. So many of these younger track announcers replacing, veteran voices that are synonymous with tracks, and hopefully Josh becomes that at Delaware Park, Del Park. Let's take a break here a little bit past the top of the hour. As promised, Pat Cummings is going to join us, and we'll probably take Pat around to the top of hour three, and we'll talk about the final piece of his extensive deep dive into wagering security issues with the tote, and some of the concerns that that players have, and things that that vex really the atmosphere around horseplay. Pat Cummings joins us next. Racing Think Tank. Stay with us.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Bleeder Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
A great story to tell in Pennsylvania. Only three states have produced more Breeders' Cup champions, and no state can match our performance in recent years. Since 2016, our numbers of mares bred has skyrocketed, unlike the national trend. And this year's live foal report shows Pennsylvania up over 50%. Why? Our incentives and bonuses are the best in North America. Please visit us at pabred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-9 938-4643.